Crusade Channel News. News you can trust because the truth can be trusted. From the Crusade Channel News Desk, here's Celeste Youngblood.
Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Youngblood coming to you from the Veritas Radio Network News Bureau with your headlines at this hour on this Monday, July 31st, 2017. Theologians have been given access to Vatican secret archives to study an encyclical. And then I'll have your stock market report and saint of the day. A lesbian is asking for the removal of the judge in her court case because of his Christian beliefs, and an update on Venezuela. The Catholic Herald is reporting that four marriage and family life theologians have been given access to the Vatican's secret archives in order to study the writing of Humanae Vitae and tell the story of how and why it was written. Normally, archival material may not be accessed for 70 years, but due to next year's 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae coming up and the heavy influence that the document has had on the life of the Church, the Vatican has allowed the group to access the material. The group is being held by Monsignor Gilfredo Marengo, professor of theological anthropology at Rome's Pontifical John Paul II Institute for Studies on Marriage and Family. Monsignor Marengo told Catholic News Service that far from being an effort to deconstruct or undermine Humanae Vitae, their effort, quote, is a work of historical critical investigation without any aim other than reconstructing, as well as possible, the whole process of composing the encyclical. Anyone who imagined any other aim should have simply done their work and verified their sources, end quote. Who are those who have imagined another aim to this group? Steve Skojec of 1 Peter 5 has been claiming that this research group is actually a commission set up by Pope Francis and Archbishop Vincenzo Paglia, head of the Vatican's Pontifical Academy for Life, to revisit and possibly revise the teachings of Humanae Vitae. Crux reports that Paglia denied the existence of any such commission to Argentine journalist Andres Beltramo Alvarez, saying, quote, there's no commission, that's all been made up. Skojec explains that Monsignor Marengo himself cited in an article entitled Humanae Vitae and Amoris Laetitia, quote, the polemical game, the pill yes, the pill no, like today's communion to the divorced yes, communion to the divorced no, is only an appearance of discomfort and strain, which is much more decisive in the fabric of ecclesial life. Was he suggesting that the same ambiguities from Amoris Laetitia about communion for the divorced and remarried should exist with regards to Humanae Vitae and the use of contraception? Skojec suggests that there must be another aim to the research group, such as searching for loopholes and examining what possible equivocations Pope Paul VI might have explored before writing his encyclical. Crux reports that Monsignor Marengo confirmed the prophetic value of Humanae Vitae, and their article also points out that Pope Francis has praised Humanae Vitae on several occasions, saying Pope Paul VI's genius was prophetic, continuing, quote, he had the courage to stand against the majority, to defend moral discipline, to exercise a break on the culture, to oppose both present and future neo-Malthusianism. On another occasion, the Holy Father said of Pope Paul VI, quote, he had the strength to defend openness to life at a time when many people were worried about population growth. Although he has urged priests to exercise generosity and compassion with couples who are contracepting, he has never suggested that the teachings of Humanae Vitae should be altered. Skojec remains unconvinced, stating that while early on there was nothing but denials about the existence of any group being formed to work with Humanae Vitae, the fact that now the Vatican admits to the existence of such a group, just claiming that instead of it being a commission, it's a research group, but nonetheless a group with the same members that had been identified when denials were everywhere, Skojec says, quote, mark me down as skeptical. Is this simply a game of tomato, tomato, potato, potato? I don't know, but only time will work this whole thing out. And now it's time for your market report. On Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 34 points and, as of right now, is up 69 points at 21,899. The NASDAQ on Friday closed down 8 points and, as of right now, is down 22 points at 6,352. The S&P 500 on Friday closed down 3 points and, as of right now, is up less than a point at 2,472. In the world markets, the Japanese Nikkei closed down 35 points and the Hong Kong Hang Seng closed up 349. The London FTSE 100 closed up 4 and the DAX in Germany closed down 44. Today's quote of the day comes from Father Jacques Philippe. There is true love, and therefore happiness, only between people who freely yield possession of the self in order to give themselves to one another. Coming up after the break in Lives of the Saints and Martyrs, we honor St. Ignatius of Loyola. You're listening to Crusade News.
Patrick Henry was famous for a lot more than give me liberty or give me death. But if you're waiting for Hollywood to put that on film, you may as well wait for the next Ice Age. That's why I started Founding Father Films. Hi, I'm Mike Church, and I invite you and your family to see and hear the greatest stories never told in my movies, The Spirit of 76 and The Road to Independence, on DVD and CD, and available now at Amazon.com, MikeChurch.com, or call 866-483-3833.
Inigo López de Loyola was born in Spain in 1491, the youngest of 13 children. He became a soldier by 18 years of age and chased, rather successfully, after military glory, and changed his name to Ignatius. While defending Pamplona in 1521, his leg was struck and badly mangled by a cannonball. During his long and excruciating recovery, he read about the life of Christ and the lives of the saints, and experienced a profound conversion in his own life. Ignatius spent the next years nurturing a call to convert others by obtaining a remarkable education. During this time, and while in Paris, Ignatius met Peter Faber and Francis Xavier. The three men later received permission from Pope Paul III to start their own order, named the Society of Jesus, more commonly known today as the Jesuits. The order is known for their work in education. Ignatius died at the age of 64 on July 31, 1556. St. Ignatius of Loyola, pray for us. AL.com is reporting that a lesbian mother in Alabama has petitioned the Alabama Court of Civil Appeals, demanding the recusal of Judge Jonathan C. Bell from her divorce case against husband Zachary Thomas Likens. She took this step after having asked Judge Bell herself twice and having been refused both times. She claims that Judge Bell's status as a fundamentalist preacher for the last 15 years and his, quote, publicly expressed belief that homosexual relationships and marriages are contrary to God's law will possibly influence his decisions regarding child custody in her divorce case. Judge Bell identifies as a Baptist. The appeals court denied her request last Thursday, pointing out that Judge Bell granted her joint physical custody and has done the same in past custody battles involving lesbian mothers. The Associated Press reports that despite mass boycotts and civilian clashes with Venezuelan security forces, the elections for a constitutional assembly went on in Venezuela yesterday. President Nicolas Maduro claimed victory and will move ahead with creating the constitutional assembly, which will enable the president and his ruling socialist party to rule Venezuela with practically unlimited powers. Maduro claimed that over 8 million people voted in the elections, but members of the opposition and even one well-respected independent analysis put the number of voters much closer to 3.6 million. The BBC reports that at least 10 people died in the clashes between police and protesters. BBC correspondent Will Grant reported from Caracas, explaining why this election will only add to Venezuela's problems.
This was the bloodiest election day in living memory, really, in Venezuela. And as you say, it's completely compounded existing problems. The governments say that around 41.5% of the electorate turned out to vote for them, and they're taking that as a resounding victory. But most Venezuelans, I think, watched in disbelief when that result was announced. They simply don't believe that many people turned out in support of the government, given the disillusionment, the anger, the frustration on the streets, the long queues for basic foods, and the violence. Mr. Maduro now has a serious problem on his hands in terms of the credibility of this vote and of governing Venezuela moving forward.
In this Celestial Musings, my friends and I have long joked about forming a commune, where we would all have our own separate domiciles but would be in close proximity to one another to provide support and company in what can feel like an isolated existence, even when surrounded by many children and a neighborhood full of people. We aren't the only ones who have talked about this commune idea. I'm acquainted with many people on Facebook, and every so often I notice a random friend here and there make mention of the same idea to friends or family. I don't recall my parents' generation, the hippie commune generation, talking about this while I was growing up. So I wonder, what is this drive in my generation to gather together and live in communal harmony? Is it a desire to escape the depravity of society? No doubt that plays a part in it, but I think even more, it's a desire to be near others who share in the ups and downs, joys and hardships of the rigorous lives we have in part chosen for ourselves and which God has chosen for us. Architect Grace Kim delivered a TED Talk in April explaining something called co-housing. She has designed a building, similar to others on its block, but which functions as the residence of an intentional community of people who have their own homes within the building but are living communally. They get to know their neighbors and look after them. I'll let her tell you about it.
Loneliness is not a function of being alone, but rather a function of how socially connected you are to those around you. The concept I'd like to share with you today is an antidote to isolation. It's not a new concept. In fact, it's an age-old way of living, and it still exists in many non-European cultures around the world. And about 50 years ago, the Danes decided to make up a new name. And since then, tens of thousands of Danish people have been living in this connected way. And it's being pursued more widely around the globe as people are seeking community. This concept is co-housing. Co-housing is an intentional neighborhood where people know each other and look after one another. In co-housing, you have your own home, but you also share significant spaces, both indoors and out. But before I show you some pictures of co-housing, I'd like to first introduce you to my friends Sheila and Spencer. When I first met Sheila and Spencer, they were just entering their 60s, and Spencer was looking ahead at the end of a long career in elementary education, and really disliked the idea that he might not have children in his life upon retirement. They're now my neighbors. We live in a co-housing community that I not only designed, but developed and have my architecture practice in. This community is very intentional about our social interactions. So let me take you on a tour. From the outside, we look like any other small apartment building. In fact, we look identical to the one next door, except that we're bright yellow. Inside, the homes are fairly conventional. We all have living rooms and kitchens, bedrooms and baths. And there are 9 of these homes around a central courtyard. This one's mine, and this one's Spencer and Sheila's. And the thing that makes this building uniquely co-housing are not the homes, but rather what happens here, the social interactions that happen in and around that central courtyard. When I look across the courtyard, I look forward to seeing Spencer and Sheila. In fact, every morning, this is what I see. Spencer waving at me furiously as we're making our breakfast. From our homes, we look down into the courtyard. And depending on the time of year, we see this. Kids and grown-ups in various combinations playing and hanging out with each other. There's a lot of giggling and chatter. There's a lot of hula hooping. And every now and then, "Hey, quit hitting me," or a cry from one of the kids. These are the sounds of our daily lives and the sounds of social connectedness. At the bottom of the courtyard, there are a set of double doors, and those lead into the common house. And I consider the common house the secret sauce of co-housing. It's a secret sauce because it's the place where the social interactions and community life begin. And from there, it radiates out through the rest of the community. Inside our common house, we have a large dining room to seat all 28 of us and our guests, and we dine together 3 times a week. In support of those meals, we have a large kitchen so that we can take turns cooking for each other in teams of 3. So that means with 17 adults, I lead cook once every 6 weeks. 2 other times, I show up and help my team with the preparation and cleanup. And all those other nights, I just show up. I have dinner, talk with my neighbors, and I go home having been fed a delicious meal by someone who cares about my vegetarian preferences. Our 9 families have intentionally chosen an alternative way of living. Instead of pursuing the American dream, where we might have been isolated in our single-family homes, we instead chose co-housing so that we can increase our social connections. And that's how co-housing starts, with a shared intention to live collaboratively. Communitas is a fancy social science way of saying spirit of community. And in visiting over 80 different communities, my measure of communitas became how frequently did residents eat together. While it's completely up to each group how frequently they have common meals, I know some that have eaten together every single night for the past 40 years. I know others that have an occasional potluck once or twice a month. And from my observations, I can tell you, those that eat together more frequently, they exhibit higher levels of communitas. It turns out, when you eat together, you start planning more activities together. When you eat together, you share more things. You start to watch each other's kids. You lend out your power tools. You borrow each other's cars. And despite all this, as my daughter loves to say, everything is not rainbows and unicorns in co-housing. And I'm not best friends with every single person in my community. We even have differences and conflicts. But living in co-housing, we're intentional about our relationships. We're motivated to resolve our differences. We follow up, we check in, we speak our personal truths, and when appropriate, we apologize. In 2015, Brigham Young University completed a study that showed a significant increased risk of premature death in those who were living in isolation. The U.S. Surgeon General has declared isolation to be a public health epidemic. And this epidemic is not restricted to the U.S. alone. So when I said earlier that co-housing is an antidote to isolation, what I should have said is that co-housing can save your life.
Now, understandably, some people are just very private, and this idea would not appeal to them. But some people out there are quite isolated and lonely, starved for human interaction, and perhaps without the benefit of any family nearby. I couldn't help but notice that she said that there are 28 people who live in her community, but that 17 of them were adults. That doesn't make for a lot of children. And I wonder if the loneliness of these people has anything to do with the fact that as a society, we're just not having kids anymore. Is co-housing a substitute for what used to be the extended family home, where three generations lived under one roof? Could be. Is co-housing a substitute for what used to be lively and vibrant neighborhoods where children played together and neighbors spent time chatting with each other and enjoying each other's company? Could be. Is co-housing a substitute for the large families that we used to have in our culture, but which nowadays are looked upon with derision and scorn? Could be. I definitely think there is a niche in the modern world for this type of living arrangement. Your contributions are welcome. If you have a news tip, send it to news@veritasradionetwork.com. Stay tuned now for the True Money Show. Celeste Youngblood signing off for the Crusade Channel, serving you, serving truth.
You've just heard Crusade Channel News, live on your News Talk and Saints leader, the Crusade Channel. And did you know that all newscasts are available as podcasts on CrusadeChannel.com and on our free app available in the Google Play and iTunes stores? Surprised?
If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
Crusade Channel News. News you can trust. Because the truth can be trusted.